Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has accused Russia of planning to destroy a hydroelectric dam in the eastern Kherson region, posing a threat to a 400-kilometer Soviet-built long canal network. It's in the same area where Ukrainian soldiers have been steadily advancing, and Moscow-installed authorities have begun what they call evacuations of civilians. A foreign correspondent with Channel 4 News is Pádraig O'Brien. He joins us now on the line from the Kherson region of Ukraine, and you're very welcome to the programme this evening, Pádraig. I know you spent the last couple of days travelling around the eastern part of Ukraine that was recently reclaimed back from the Russians. What did you find in these reclaimed areas?
Well, I'll give you an example, Sarah. We were down just on the outskirts of the Kherson region. We were in a little village called Mykolaivka. And this is a small place. Before the war, it had about 250 residents, but it's about half of that now. Most of them are elderly people. And we spent like a couple of hours talking to one particular group of elderly women that were sitting around the square when we went in there. And Valentina and her friends were kind of telling us what life was like under occupation. And they told us one particular story that I really sort of got to me, I have to say. They told me that there was actually a secret path out of the village along the River Dnipro, where people were trying to escape and trying to leave Russian occupation and get back into Ukraine. And one of the people who traveled along this path after they had got out posted a picture of this path on social media. And the Russians saw the picture. And the day after that, the Russians mined this escape route out of the village. And just a couple of days after that, a family, a father, a mother, and their child were trying to escape, walked along the path. The father stepped on a mine, and he was killed. The mother injured, and both mother and the little child survived. So that just really illustrated to me how you can only leave occupied Kherson if you're doing so on the Russian terms. And that's why this evacuation in Kherson city is so important.
And can you tell us a bit more about that evacuation then? What's happening and what does it mean?
Yeah, well, the Russians are calling it an evacuation. The Ukrainians are calling it a deportation. So what's happening is the Russians are anticipating an advance forward by the Ukrainians into Kherson city. The Russians also may be planning to retreat, by the way. But ahead of that, they're warning people to leave Kherson city. And they're specifically talking about this dam you spoke about earlier. They're saying, the Russians are, that the Ukrainians are about to strike that dam. Now, if that dam, the Ukrainians, by the way, have no intention of striking that dam. The Russians, on the other hand, have the dam mined. If the dam blows, it could flood up to 80 settlements and part of Kherson city. So devastating consequences.
So when you say they're evacuating then or deporting, depending on which word you're using, is it Russian settlers or people that they'd moved in from Russia that they're trying to get out, or are they taking Ukrainians against their will?
So it's a complicated picture. Some are choosing to leave, some are leaving because they've no choice, and some are being forced to leave. So, for example, the people who are being forced to leave are employees of the proxy administration down there largely. Now, that also, though, includes people like doctors, nurses, teachers. For those people, many of them, this will feel like a deportation, not an evacuation. Some people will be leaving because they want to go. They're buying the Russian message, if you like, so are deciding to leave. But also, you know, either way, whether the Ukrainians move down or whether the Russians start to retreat, it's a catch-22 for the residents, no matter what their political affiliation is.
And in relation to the dam, then, it sounds like that is going to become very important over the next couple of days and weeks. What does Russia have to gain by damaging the dam?
Well, so they, for them, it's an opportunity to scupper the Ukrainian advance, potentially. And it's also, it's to sow terror, I guess, in the minds of civilians there. They want people out, and by telling them that the dam could go, that is focusing minds. It's keeping it's making people very nervous. The possibility of wholesale flooding in that area is forcing people to do basically what the Russians want them to do, which is to leave that area. But the flip side of that, of course, also is that it could scupper this Ukrainian advance. Mm-hmm. The irony of all of this, by the way, is that the Russians are telling people to leave. To leave to go onto the left bank of the river, which is the place more susceptible to the flooding if it was to happen. The safest place to go would be onto the other side because it's higher ground, but the Russians are telling people to go in the other direction.
How are people coping, those people that you've spoken to then in the reclaimed areas in around Kherson? I know you've spoken about that very traumatic story and that family losing the father and the family, but generally, how are people coping and how are they mentally after what they've been through?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, everyone's different, right? So everyone has different sorts of support networks, etc. And those elderly ladies that I spent time with yesterday, there's kind of quite small things that you don't think about, I think, that really affect people in war. It's not all the kind of big ticket trauma stuff. It's quite small things. So, for example, their heating's out and it's starting to get really, really cold here. And, you know, we saw elderly people trying to like chop wood in the village to try and feed the wood stove at home, you know, sleeping in all of their with layers of clothes on. So, you know, it's small things like that, I think, that are really affecting people. And another woman that really struck me yesterday, for her able-bodied, if you like, younger family, her granddaughters and her daughters had left at the beginning of the war because they could. And for her, the real pain of the war was that pain of like family departed.
Indeed, I think that the electricity problem or the problem of energy is all around Ukraine now at this point, isn't it? I've seen maps today on social media of the various different areas. It is mostly in the east and the south, but in other areas as well, where it's good. I know you're saying it's a little thing and that it's not part of the battle per se, but as winter approaches, it could really cause huge problems for people.
Oh, enormous. I mean, we talk about sort of destroyed energy infrastructure, but what we're actually talking about is, you know, homes without heating, classrooms without light, hospital wards without electricity. So it's going to be, and I think that's what Vladimir Putin is banking on, by the way. I think he's hit the big weapon, if you like, in his arsenal is a tough winter, not just for Europeans as we struggle with the energy crisis in Europe, but for those ordinary Ukrainians who are going to be sitting like cold in their apartments. And I'll tell you another thing just very quickly, Sarah. The people who will really feel the cold are the people whose apartments, the windows of their apartments have been blown out by missiles during this war. So you have, you know, poverty compound. You have this war is like compounding poverty and it's compounding fuel poverty.
And just finally then, Porik, we're actually having a discussion a little earlier today about the problem with finding accommodation and indeed the services, just the basic services for refugees coming from Ukraine. Taoiseach Micheál Martin saying that this is all part of Putin's plan to drive migration, drive people out of Ukraine to Europe, cause more disruption. Are people leaving still in large numbers, given what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, in particular from Russia?
The numbers, I mean, I was covering the refugee crisis here at the very beginning of the war. And now the numbers are nothing, you know, like that. I think actually at the moment, the numbers that are leaving for the European Union and the numbers coming back from the European Union into Ukraine are about, at the same sort of level. But I know that there's definitely preparations happening here and at the European level for the winter ahead. They're expecting another spike in the exodus off the back of this energy crisis and a really cold winter. And I was here in January before the war started down in Mariupol, actually. And there is nothing quite as painful as a Ukrainian winter at its coldest. So that is something to really watch out for, I think.
Okay, very tough winter ahead. Porik O'Brien, foreign correspondent with the Channel 4 News. Thank you very much.